Get Sleepy is a production of Slumber Studios and is made possible thanks to the generous support of our sponsors and premium members. If you'd like to listen ad-free and access weekly bonus episodes, extra-long stories, and our entire back catalogue, you can try out Premium free for 7 days by following the link in the episode notes. Now, a quick word from our sponsors.
When your gut feels off, your whole day can feel off. Activia probiotic yogurts and dailies are a quick, easy, and tasty way to up your gut health game every day. They're deliciously smooth and creamy and packed with billions of live and active probiotics. Your gut is where it all begins, so start with Activia. Enjoying Activia twice a day for 2 weeks as part of a balanced diet and healthy lifestyle can help reduce the frequency of minor digestive discomfort.
This is the sound of your ride home with Dad after he caught you vaping. Awkward, isn't it? Most vapes contain seriously addictive levels of nicotine and disappointment. Know the real cost of vapes. Brought to you by the FDA.
Hey, friends. Welcome to Get Sleepy, where we listen, we relax, and we get sleepy. My name's Thomas, and I'm your host. Thanks for listening, and welcome to this special 5th anniversary bonus episode. Remember to come back tomorrow night to hear another dreamy story that I'll be narrating. As for this evening, Nadim will be reading to us, and the story was once again written by Joe Steer. Have you ever been curious about what it might be like to dance with a partner around a historic ballroom? To glide across the floor beneath sparkling chandeliers, your movements timed to the rhythm of music? That's what Lena has planned for tonight, as she attends an event in Blackpool, England. She'll dance the evening away on the Irish Sea coast at a historic dance hall that was built in the 19th century. So, make sure you're comfortable in bed, placing any physical distractions to one side, and allowing your eyes to gently close when you're ready. Take some deep, steady breaths, allowing your body to relax into the support of your bed, and encouraging a slower pace of activity to envelop your mind. I hope you're feeling calm and untroubled, perhaps even starting to drift towards sleep already. But if your mind seems determined that it needs to remind you of certain things, or if some anxieties and concerns are restricting you from total relaxation, let me just remind you of something. You have the power to soften and quell your worries and anxieties. It's something I have to remind myself of very often. But when we worry about something, it's our mind's way of trying to keep us safe, to protect us from a perceived danger. So, should you be feeling any sense of worry or anxiety, let your mind know that you appreciate its efforts to keep you safe. But you can handle whatever life throws at you. The anxieties and fears you feel are born out of your mind's conditioned response to whatever it may be that's troubling you. But you can say to your mind, "Thank you for trying to look after me, but I am strong enough to handle this. And it's not as dangerous as you think." Now, I know this practice is easier said than done, and typically the subconscious doesn't always believe what you say at first. But see if you can just gradually increase that inner awareness and softly extinguish whatever is weighing you down or holding you back. For now, take one more deep, relaxing inhale and softly let the air back out. It's time to follow Nadine's voice as we begin tonight's story in Blackpool.
Blackpool is located in the county of Lancashire. It's a seaside resort on the west coast of England. The town is bordered by the Irish Sea that lies between the islands of Great Britain and Ireland. The resort town gained popularity from mid-19th century when holidays and day trips became more affordable to all. This coincided with the advent of rail travel and saw Britons begin flocking to their nearest sandy coastline. Blackpool proved itself to be particularly enticing thanks to an increasing number of tourist attractions. Alongside donkey rides, slot machines and palm readers on the pier, there were the unique amusements that the area would become known for. The earliest example began in 1879 with a 66-day light show called The Illuminations. 8 carbon arc lamps brought what was described as artificial sunshine to the Blackpool Promenade, months before Thomas Edison patented the electric light bulb. Now, more than 1 million light bulbs are used over a distance of 10 kilometres to bring the town to life throughout autumn. From 1896, Blackpool Pleasure Beach attracted thrill seekers and families. Even today, it boasts one of Europe's oldest rides, a flying spaceship merry-go-round called Sir Hiram Maxim's Captive Flying Machine, which opened in 1904. The Pleasure Beach is included in the annual Illuminations. So too is the town's most famous landmark, Blackpool Tower on the Golden Promenade. Inspired by the Eiffel Tower in Paris, France, it's 158 metres tall and painted dark red. Though it's half the size of its French counterpart, it was the tallest man-made structure in the British Empire when it was opened in 1894. The name Blackpool Tower applies to the mast itself, but also an entertainment complex attached to its base. Within this three-story building, the as a circus and aquarium, as well as charming roof gardens and a stunning ballroom. It's the Tower Ballroom that Lena has come to see, having travelled by coach early this morning. She's visiting with friends from her local social club, all retirees in their 60s and 70s. Dancing for Lena is a relatively new hobby. Though she had a few lessons many years ago as a young girl in Poland. Her family moved to England when she was just 13. And all thoughts of dancing seemed left behind her in her homeland. That all changed around a year ago, when a friend invited her to a local dance. After a little instruction and a whole lot of practice, she rekindled her passion and talent for dancing. Since then, she's attended weekly classes and learned the steps to various dances. She's even recruited friends from her gardening and book clubs, one of whom suggested a trip to Blackpool. Lena has heard many great things about the elegant dance hall, just meters from the coastline. Also about the events, like the one held today, combining dance, music, and afternoon tea. She made sure to enjoy a morning at the seaside after arriving in Blackpool earlier. Alongside her friends, she's walked the piers and promenades, enjoying the cool autumnal weather. On the central pier, she took a ride on the Ferris wheel and observed the town from a very great height. From the seat of her carriage, she ate a cone of vanilla ice cream. Afterwards, she spent a few pleasant hours reclining in a deck chair of red and white stripes. She sat and read a book facing the shoreline. She basked in the sunlight and salty sea air. A little after noon, the group checked into their hotel, just a short walk away from Blackpool Tower. They changed into their outfits, most bought for the occasion, and wandered out to where they are now. They're a merry bunch as they walk the promenade, eyes raised up to take in the tower. The ladies wear dresses and free-flowing skirts, while the gentlemen are clad in their finest suits. Lena's dress is particularly striking. It's navy blue, the colour of nighttime. A peacock has been embroidered across its front and sides, its feathers blended with the plumage of the skirt. Her hair has been set in short silver curls that bring out the colour in her grey-blue eyes. She wears earrings and a necklace of emerald green. It matches the hue of the peacock's feathers. Lena walks carefully in her navy satin heels, taking the arm of a gentleman named Albert. Her partner on the dance floor, his outfit is matching in navy linen. Together, they walk towards the famous landmark, feeling the sea air as it tickles at their clothes. They reach the promenade just in front of the tower and find their eyes drawn down towards the ground. The comedy carpet is a fairly recent addition and is one of the largest art installations in the United Kingdom, The catchphrases and jokes of writers and comedians are immortalized in color, like an old-fashioned playbill. In total, the quotes cover nearly 2,000 square meters. Each one differs in size and color. In places, the lettering is a meter tall, so that it might be read from the top of Blackpool Tower. Lena chuckles as she walks across the stones, reminded of jokes and comedians long forgotten. It brings to mind memories of laughter and enjoyment, of good times shared with friends and loved ones. The group stroll easily across the painted stones towards the red brick building, 3 stories tall. The name Blackpool Tower is positioned front and center in lettering that looks to light up the evening. Lena remembers that it's a Grade 1 listed building. It's protected as a site of exceptional public interest. Indeed, she might have guessed it from the front of the building, which blends various hallmarks of historic design. Glass-paneled doors line the base of the building, forming multiple entranceways below stained glass windows. The latter are shaped like semicircular fans with geometric panels across their surface. The windows are a feature of Art Deco design, popular between the First and Second World Wars. They're a modern touch on the face of a building that was established at the end of the Victorian era. These fan-shaped windows are set within a recess and surrounded by patterns sculpted into the brickwork. Above these, there are the windows of the building's second floor. They're white-framed rectangles with diamonds across the glass. From a distance, Lena can see above the second floor to the conservatory-like windows that line the upper floor. She can make out the figures of people sitting at tables, eating and drinking as they gaze out of the windows. The tower itself rises from the center of the building. It's an enormous red pylon soaring towards the sky. Figures can be seen from its topmost glass window, viewing the town below from the so-called Tower Eye. The group make their way across the road. They enter the tower through the elegant glass doors and show their tickets to staff at the desk. Lena is struck by the change in ambiance between the sunny outdoor coastline and the world within the tower. Mahogany furniture on claret red carpets creates a sleepy atmosphere, both charming and peaceful. This feeling only builds as the group take the lift and travel upwards to where the ballroom is located. They approach the glass doors, framed in rich dark mahogany. The words, "Welcome to the ballroom," are etched across the glass. While an original smaller ballroom opened at Blackpool Tower in 1894, the opulent Tower Ballroom opened its doors in 1899. It was designed by a man named Frank Matcham, who was also responsible for the Blackpool Grand Theatre. It has a great deal in common with a theatre or opera house, with its decorative ceiling, chandeliers and balconies. Lena is mesmerized by the coving, with its gold patterns swirled around figures which are painted floating across the ceiling. At the front of the room, there's a sizable stage with a man on an organ, spotlighted at the center. This is the ballroom's famous Wurlitzer organ. Its home has been this very stage since 1935. The organist plays against a painted backdrop, one designed to appear like a coastline. Prop railings line the stage floor behind him, so it looks as though he's playing from a sun-kissed terrace. The stage is framed by thick velvet curtains. They're ruby red in color and embroidered with gold. Around them, the wall has been expertly sculpted to appear like the front of an ancient Greek temple. Soaring columns flank both sides of the stage, some lined, some flat, including ornate decoration. At the top, sculpted figures look down across the ballroom. They're tunic-clad gods, shimmering in gold. Lena remembers reading about the design of the dance floor and the quote that's written beneath these figures. "Bid me discourse, I will enchant thine ear." It's from Shakespeare's sonnet, Venus and Adonis. Clearly, some visitors have already been enchanted by the dulcet tones echoing from the stage. There are three couples twirling around the dance floor, moving to the rhythm of the music from the organ. Albert leads Lena across the carpet to one of the many large tables positioned beside the dance floor. He pulls out a ruby-cushioned chair and she takes a seat amongst the others in her group. They're quickly greeted by a charming young waiter who carries a tray of sparkling champagne flutes. They choose from a selection of champagne or orange juice, clinking glasses together before taking their first sip. Lena sips her drink while watching the dance floor and admiring the moves of the elegant dancing couples. She notes the reflection of chandeliers from the ceiling. They glow like stars on the wooden dance floor. Lena read recently that the floor has been restored and expertly returned to its original state. A century of varnish was carefully broken down before the woodwork was sanded and lovingly resealed. The dance floor is over 100 feet wide and made from a mixture of mahogany, oak, and walnut. Over 30,000 wooden blocks have been used to make the floor, forming a unique arrangement of geometric patterns. She's admiring the patterns nearest her table when the waiter returns with a trolley full of food. He lays down a series of 3-tiered cake trays, presenting afternoon tea to each pair. Lena admires the contents of all 3 trays, beginning with a plate of fresh golden scones. Porcelain dishes are placed right beside them, containing strawberry jam and thick clotted cream. Another displays a selection of cakes and sweet treats, including tarts, brownies, and dainty sponge slices. Though for now, Lena is more interested in sandwiches, cut into rectangles on the bottom plate. It's been years since she indulged in afternoon tea or enjoyed a sandwich without its crust. It's been longer still since she washed down her lunch with sips from a glass of finest crystal. The group chat amongst themselves as they nibble on sandwiches and listen to the organ. They watch as the couples sweep across the dance floor, skirts twisting and turning to the rhythm of the music. The tunes are reminiscent of what one might hear today being played from a ride at a funfair. The sound brings to mind a merry-go-round of horses, or a wind-up jewelry box that plays music on being opened. This kind of music, combined with the lavish decor, creates a bewitching feeling within the ballroom. It's as if the hall were a massive time capsule, a living memory of the 20th century. Indeed, the room is a tribute to music, as defined by the quote written above the stage. The names of 16 composers are also dotted about the room for keen-eyed patrons to discover throughout their visit. Lena can see one name from where she's sitting. It's the Italian composer Giuseppe Verdi. He's perhaps best known for his operatic masterpieces like Rigoletto and La Traviata. His surname is written on the wall above a balcony with a network of elaborate floral patterns. It's brightened by the glow of a high-up light fitting, as are the figures of cherubs below it. Lena feels that she could sit for hours and examine the details of this grand and sumptuous room. She might never tire of the moulding on the walls, or the glow of people's faces beneath crystal chandeliers. Though, that doesn't mean she'll be staying seated. The best way to see a ballroom is by dancing around it. So, once she's had her fill of delicate little sandwiches, she accepts Albert's arm and heads onto the dance floor. The ballroom has a policy of non-stop music. One song merges seamlessly into the next. What this means for patrons is that it's never the wrong time to join those on the dance floor. And so they begin, with their postures upright. Albert's left hand raises Lena's right. His other hand goes beneath her arm and across her shoulder blade, while Lena's free hand goes onto Albert's shoulder. She is positioned to the right of Albert. This reduces the chance that their feet might clash. Both gaze upwards over the other's right shoulder as Albert leads them in a waltz box step. It's the very first step that Lena learned, and is timed to the beat of 1, 2, 3. She's done it so many times that it's almost unconscious, as natural to the body as breathing or walking. On the first count, her left foot comes forward to the top left corner of an invisible box. Next, her right leg slides left towards it, before tapping to the right on the count of two. From there, Lena's weight shifts over to her right. Left foot slides to right to the count of three. After this, she repeats the steps at the box's bottom corners. Moving backwards instead of forwards, from right to left. It's a simple step, but appears very elegant, especially when those dancing are so well practiced. Lena moves backwards, Albert moves forwards, and vice versa. Their movements in unison. They certainly make for a handsome pair as they glide with poise around the smooth wooden dance floor. The hardwood floor is built upon springs so that it absorbs shocks and makes movements seem lighter. The skirt of Lena's dress sways from side to side, a blur of midnight blue with flashes of green. The beadwork of the peacock embroidered across the front twinkles beneath the glow of soft golden light. The couple continue dancing as the music changes. It's a tune that they've practiced, The Gold and Silver Waltz by Franz Lehár. Though neither of them have heard it sound quite like this, played across the keyboards of the historic theatre organ. This particular instrument was commissioned by Reginald Dixon, the resident organist from 1930 to 1970. It includes three levels of keyboard, known as manuals, and over 1,000 pipes. A discus-shaped blower provides wind for the organ, while different types of flutes operate at different wind pressures. The resulting sounds are 5 times higher than what might be produced by your average church organ. The Wurlitzer was first designed to form the soundtrack to silent films. It allowed one person alone to emulate an orchestra. Notes mimic a wide range of instruments, from the tuba and saxophone to a cymbal and glockenspiel. A tone chute directs the sound of the organ chambers down the steps of the stage and onto the dance floor. There, it's amplified by the acoustics of the ballroom, resulting in a sound that feels all-encompassing. To Lena and Albert, it's like waltzing through a dream. There's only the music and the floor beneath them. They feel as if they're moving in slow motion because their well-practiced steps are so fluid, so seamless. Eventually, the couple return to the table where Lena reclines in the ruby red seat. She samples the delights of the golden fruit scone, spreading jam and cream across its surface. Part of the beauty of afternoon tea is that the group can eat at their own leisure. They can nibble on morsels between turns on the dance floor. They can sip champagne as they listen to the organ. In between bites, Lena chats to her friends. all are made happy by their food and surroundings. They make a game of spotting the names of composers between them, adding Bach, Mozart, and Beethoven to their findings. Many are prompted to share long-lost memories, brought to mind by songs being played. There are tales of families huddled around the radio and descriptions of first hearing a needle touch a vinyl record. A lady beside Lena recalls attending a dance and watching her parents tango across the room. She describes every tiny detail of her mother's yellow dress, as if the silk fabric were laid before her on the table. One of the songs reminds Lena of the seaside and the first family holiday that she had in England. She remembers building sandcastles beside her younger brother and trying her first ice cream as she walked along the pier. It's lovely to reminisce about such happy times, and even better, to share memories with like-minded souls. Such conversation lifts everyone's spirits. Faces seem to glow with pleasure and contentment. Having allowed time for her food to settle, Lena is ready for a little more dancing. She takes Albert's hand and heads onto the dance floor, where he leads her now in a basic foxtrot. They step forward slowly, right foot then left, eyes fixed above the partner's right shoulder. Next comes a quick step, sliding over to the right with the left foot, following the join to the right. The organist plays a tune in the style of swing, a type of jazz music popularized in the 1920s, 30s, and 40s. Downbeats and upbeats, followed by a 4x4 rhythm, producing a tune that is perfect to dance to. There's something very calming about the rhythm of the foxtrot. Though the moves are fast, the beat seems very steady. Lena seems to float on the wooden dance floor. Her feet feel light, as if she's dancing on top of clouds. Dancing for Lena is active relaxation. It's a form of meditation as much as exercise. It's wonderful to be absorbed so wholly by an action, to be entirely engaged in the present moment. Again, the steps feel as natural as breathing. Her body moves automatically, remembering what it's practiced. This frees up her mind to notice other things, the sensations of dancing, the mood, and the music. She's mindful of the fabric of Albert's linen suit and the touch of her skirt as it sways on the pivot. The air inside the ballroom moves her earrings as the couple twirl around the room. Occasionally, she catches the face of a friend replicating the foxtrot in time to the music. The swaying of skirts is almost hypnotic as they glide and sashay around the room. Soon, Lena will return to her table for a little more food and some heartfelt conversation. But for now, she's content to twirl around the dance floor, her movements flowing like water. She can follow the sounds of the Wurlitzer organ and the music that pours down the steps from the stage. She can imagine herself dancing on a sun-soaked terrace in the coastal scene behind the organ on this enchanting day in Blackpool.